We're pleased to be joined by Aurora Davidson, CEO of Amerigo Resources. Amerigo is a unique copper producer. They recover copper from the wastewater of the world's largest copper mine in Chile. The company is focused on returning cash flow to shareholders through dividends and buybacks. Amerigo has an industry-leading dividend yield of 9.2%. I had a tweet out yesterday where I believe right now is truly a time where owning companies that have yield, and I was speaking with regards to oil and gas, but it applies the same for mining as well. I believe you have asymmetric upside where you participate in the upside, but then you have that downside cushion, obviously, from the dividend yields. Amerigo has a 9.2% dividend yield. In our conversation today, we'll be covering copper supply and demand fundamentals, the industry challenges of bringing copper online, and Amerigo's operations. Aurora, thank you so much for joining us.
I'm glad to be here. Thanks for having me again.
Thank you. Scott, you want to kick it off?
Sure, yeah. So Aurora, I just wanted to echo Tom's sentiment. Thank you for dropping some of your knowledge. You've been in the copper industry for a long time. You've been operating in Chile for a long time. So very excited to talk a little bit about copper. And more specifically, you know, we want to drill down a little bit on that country and what's going on, because the copper market really is Chile. It's such a juggernaut for so long. So it's important to know where things are going in that country. So I just wanted to start things off with a little bit of backdrop price of copper. It's been languishing lately. It's still at elevated levels. I guess the average this year has kind of been in line with 2022. So that's what I would call that languishing. But I wanted to get your overall thoughts about copper prices in 2024. And have you seen any long-term changes to fundamentals that we should be aware of?
Yeah, well, let's start by saying that copper, as you have said, has not shown a really any sustained periods of weakness this year. The average price, I like to give numbers because numbers tell the story quite well. The average price for this year is currently $3.90 per pound. And this compares to what we had as an average price last year, which was $4. So if you look at this, this is a very steady performance for copper in a terrible economic year from whichever angle you wanted to look at it. So let me share my thoughts regarding the price of copper this year before I give you my view on fundamentals and 2024. Here's what I see this year. The hopes for a dramatic Chinese recovery after the pandemic restrictions did not occur. And throughout the rest of the world, we have faced the rigors of a very tight monetary policy. Despite these significant factors, these significant economic factors, copper prices have averaged 2% lower than in 2022. You call that languishing. I call that a stellar performance when we talk about copper.
That's a good point to put in perspective.
If at the end of last year, we had seen through a crystal ball the hard economic data that has transpired so far this year, everyone underdog would have forecast a lower average copper price than $3.90. So copper prices don't take their time to react to economic news. Their response is immediate. Hence, we call it Dr. Copper because we use it as a test of economic health. So if we follow this train of thought, we should assume that the average 2023 price of $3.90 is already factoring in real time, all the known economic news, all the known economic data, much of which has been negative this year. And that means in turn, from my point of view, that something else is occurring that has held up copper prices or prevented copper prices from being lower. And I think that what is happening is that a new type of copper demand and quite likely a new copper strength cycle is starting to build. We're in the process of exiting the copper super cycle that started in 2003. And just as a reference, because that's when I joined Amerigo, the copper price was 80 cents per pound back in the day. And what has happened since has been led by the surge in Chinese copper demand and entering into a new copper cycle. Now will be a more geographically diverse, as both developing and developed nations will require more copper for infrastructure and decarbonization. This is an economic shift, and with all economic shifts, there is a natural push and pull which could explain the sideways trading we have seen in copper prices here. So going a little bit back, 20 years ago, while China started consuming huge amounts of copper, developed economies, like the ones where we live in, reduced internal copper consumption dramatically because they stopped building infrastructure and they relocated manufacturing abroad, mainly to China. So China, in turn, gulped all the copper it could while it built cities, it built infrastructure, and started using substantial amount of copper for manufacturing as well. What is now being observed is that developed economies are starting to once again use copper. And this applies to traditional demand, like construction, for example. And of course, becomes more significant when you consider the traditional plus the green energy demand. Why is this happening? Well, infrastructure of most cities in the developed world requires to be modernized and revamped. This is still a traditional source of copper demand. And in addition to that, we need more efficient grids, we need storage capacity, we need charging generation infrastructure, etc., for the energy transition, which is a new source of demand. And China will also generate its own green energy demand. They're not going to not do that. So when you look at this angle, we should not forget that developing nations that that still have not gone through the massive development process that China undertook in the last 20 years and will eventually embark on it. I give you India as an example. It shares some of the drivers that we saw in China 20 years ago: developing economy with fast population growth and low levels of GDP, which are indicative of high copper consumption. So we seem to be adjusting from one cycle to another concerning how future demand will structure and build up. If you look at graphs for demand of refined copper consumption forecasts, they show China essentially flattening if you do not factor in green demand, with slight growth once you factor in the green demand. And for the rest of the world, it shows increasing traditional demand starting around now, with that demand being substantially stronger as the energy transition demand starts to kick in. There is one study from CRU that shows a base case where in 2032, green energy-related refined copper consumption would reach 18%, a low case where it will be 14%, and a high case where it will be 33% of refined copper consumption, just for green energy. The high case is based on the global economy reaching net zero by 2050. The low case basically assumes that we remain with the traditional additions of renewable generating capacity that we had in 2021. I will give you another example, and this is from Wood Mackenzie. Their estimate is that to reach net zero by 2050, the amount of additional, and I want to stress this, additional copper required in the next 20 years will be around 60% of current production. So that's my little pitch on demand. But let me flip on to the other side of the coin, which is supply. Where are we now? Global copper mine production has peaked at 22 million tons. And this production has grown steadily from 16 million tons in 2020. So just look, 16 million tons, in 2010, to 22 million tons now. But now this is starting to change again. Why? Because we have evidence that continues to show that the global copper industry is facing increasing headwinds to maintain supply levels. You talked about Chile. Let's go back to that point briefly here. The biggest copper producer is Chile, with approximately 25% of global copper mine production. In the first 7 months of this year, Chilean global copper production is down 3%. And that trend has been observed for various consecutive years now. But this phenomenon is not Chilean-centric. Global copper mine production peaked in 2013, and from 2023 on is projected to decrease year on year with a slight revamp in 2025 based on committed projects. So what is happening? Why is less copper being mined? One fundamental answer is that grade decline has been profound. And grade is essentially the amount of copper that you have in the ore. There is an interesting chart, again, from CRU that shows that the average copper industry head grades from 1998 to 2030 have decreased substantially. The amount of copper found in the ore, the grade, peaked in 2002 at an average of 0.80% copper and is currently around 0.57% copper. Average, 0.057% copper. This is a 29% decline in grade in a number of years. What this means is that less copper is present in current ore bodies, and so new projects and expansions are needed to maintain production at existing levels, not to increase it, just to maintain it at existing levels. So in terms of building up new supply, we have to consider the significant hurdles that the industry faces. For example, the long lead times for mine development. The lead time from discovery to production is currently estimated to be 14 years. It used to be that the most extended time requirement was construction, but that is changing. And now we're spending or having to spend more time in permitting because that is becoming a very convoluted aspect of building up a new mine. Of course, another hurdle is the capital cost. It may take billions to build a mine, and the cost overruns in the industry are substantial. We are not known for delivering on budget. For greenfield projects, average overruns are estimated at 50%. For brownfield expansions, they're estimated at 35%. So an overrun of 35% on $1 billion CapEx budget is not insignificant. Let me throw in some other numbers that show that the estimated investment to eliminate the 2032 supply gap for copper is at a minimum $105 billion, and that project CapEx will range anywhere from $0.6 to $9 billion per project. This is very, very significant. So in general terms, I see the market fundamentals with a very stressed supply channel that does not, as may occur in other industries, have readily available idle capacity ready to be turned on. We don't have that luxury in the copper industry. There are very few committed projects, and if and when new projects get to the coveted start line, they still may have 10 to 14 years before they can produce their first concentrate, let alone the vast investment required to get there. If, rather than being a copper producer, I was required to secure copper for an industrial process, for example, I would feel very nervous about this picture. On the other hand, we see a reordering of existing demand that will tend to be more diversified, plus the new demand coming in from the energy transition, which may be very significant. How significant? It depends who you wanna read. In any ways, in my view, this points to a period of incoming copper deficits where demand will surpass supply for the already discussed reasons. You are asking about 2024, which is basically just around the corner. It doesn't look like that, but we're going to be there in a few more months. And I looked at the latest manufacturing PMI forecast, which was published yesterday. The rule of thumb when you look at this indexes is that you get a 50 or above, it indicates economic growth. 50 means no change, and below 50 means that you have economic contraction. Looking at the consumers of refined copper, if you look at China, which of course is the largest one, it currently has an index of 51 right now, so it's just above that 50 threshold. It's expected to drop this quarter to 49, so we're in the middle of that right now, and it's expected to go back to 51 next year. Europe, which is the second, as a group of countries, the second most important consumer of copper, is in very bad shape right now, particularly Germany. Germany has an index of 39, but with recovery expected above 50 as of the first quarter of next year. And then we have the U.S. U.S. is currently at 48. It's also going over 50 next year, according to the forecast. And Japan, which is also below 50 and going back into growth territory in 2024. So the data is not telling me that things are worsening in 2024. It is telling me, however, how bad they are right now when we have had month after month of contraction. Industrial activity has been under tremendous pressure because we've had restrictive interest rates in most of the world. But the view from the ground is that improvement is in sight for 2024. And that should be extrapolated to what could be expected of or should be expected of copper price in the short term, because 2024 is the short term right now.
Wow, Rory, that was a great roundup. Tom, go ahead, take it out.
No, that was super fantastic. And I was while you were speaking, I was trying to just get some of these the data points you were referring to. I've just posted average grade of copper remaining reserves. I know you were referring to head grades, but it tells the same story effectively. But that's in the nest for those wanting to see. So I think the one point that you've highlighted that is really important is that where we sit today for the copper price, given the economic backdrop, we are clearly witnessing or seeing within the copper price a premium built in a scarcity premium, if you will. Is that fair to say right now? Like that's what, given the economic activity and given where copper price theoretically should be lower, given global economic activity, but given given the challenges that you've outlined with regards to supply, this is what we're seeing. Is that a fair take?
I think that's a fair recap of my view.
Yeah, Scott, I posted something in the nest. Scott, it's there. Yeah, for me as well.
For everyone listening, I just wanted to point to this because it backs up Aurora's point. Where if you look at so demand for copper is growing, but there's also the multiplier of what's demand on a personal level, depending on how we live our lives and how we use copper. And there's this great chart that I found that shows the history up to today. And you saw that with the invention of the internet and the explosion in semiconductor use, that led to a really step change in the efficiency of copper per person. So I think in this chart, it used to be at 2 kilograms per person. Then the internet age hit and it went all the way to almost 3.5. And so I think we're on pace for, another step change with what Aurora talked about, electric vehicles, renewables. It just uses that much more copper. So you have higher demand for copper, and you also have higher usage per capita as well, which is a powerful driver.
Yeah, that's an interesting chart in terms of like the entering or this is a translation of the electric age, really, right?
It shows the electric age part one, and then maybe we're here at part two, the beginnings of part two. Now, Aurora, maybe you mentioned, you talked about Chile a little bit. Yeah, that's where your operations are. So I wanted to get your opinion on Codelco, which is the Chilean state-owned copper company. You have a very close relationship with them through the El Teniente mine. We know that Codelco has ambitious investment plans to secure its operations and significant copper production for the next 50 years. So can you give us your thoughts on their recent financings and whether investors should worry about Codelco's ability to access funds?
Yeah. Well, I mentioned briefly the importance that Chile plays in the copper industry. And the same level of importance should be attributed to Codelco with respect to Chilean economic activity and as the world's biggest copper producer, because that's essentially what they are. For people that are not familiar with it, it's a state-owned corporation. They operate 7 mines. El Teniente is one of them. Codelco plays a very significant role in Chilean society and in the Chilean economy because they are essentially are transferring the value of copper to Chilean citizens through the transfer of profits via taxation, being that they are a state-owned entity. So in that sense, I'm confident that Codelco will always find enough support in the Chilean government to fulfill its funding needs. You were talking about their latest financing, which was done, I guess, about 2 weeks ago. And Codelco issued $2 billion in U.S. bonds to finance its expansion projects and strengthen its liquidity for this year. There were 10 and 30-year bonds. They're yielding 6 and 6.3%, if I recall. And in my opinion, what is interesting and the real takeaway from this latest financing that they did was that the order book had a considerable oversubscription of 4.7 times. And this was obviously due to the interest of investors. Codelco reported that the order book exceeded $9 billion U.S. So if you look at this oversubscription of their latest bond offering at a time when copper prices are holding stable but not booming, as we have just discussed, it gives you a very clear indication of the stature of Codelco in the global financial markets as a critical player in the global copper industry. Remember, biggest copper producer in the world is not a name that does not have a tremendous amount of clout in and by itself. Why do they need this money? Let me just talk briefly about their expansion projects. Codelco's expansion projects are not small. They are integral to ensure their goal of securing the path for global production for the next 50 years within their operations. This is a significant piece of overall copper global supply for the future. This year, Codelco's CapEx is budgeted at 4.1 billion US, and their 10-year CapEx budget is estimated at 40 billion US. So this financing was just to partially fund their annual CapEx budget. And one of the critical CapEx projects is a development plan at El Teniente, which aims to secure processing of around 130,000 tons per day for the next 50 years. Obviously, this is important for me to mention because El Teniente is the mine from which we get the tailings that allow us to produce copper.
That's very helpful. Thank you. Now, let me... I wanted to move on to... a natural resource that's very important to Chile. It's water. And with the situation currently and how you think that impacts production and go forward production maybe in the country. So there's been historic rains in Chile this year. I think you put out a press release that said if the current pace continued, which I know we're getting into the dry season now, so it is unlikely, but rainfall is going to be at least double the past few years and was on pace to be triple. So historic rainfall here. Do you think this will impact copper production countrywide? And I was thinking about this. Do you think the rains are actually a blessing in disguise? Because, you know, you talk about it's a dry country. Access to water is very important for production. Now are everyone's coffers full so that they're going to be in a better spot to be able to meet their production targets going forward, even if there's a short-term negative impact?
I'm going to narrow that question to my operations because I can give you the data on mine. Otherwise, I would just be speculating what is happening with everybody else in Chile. But Chile has been facing drought conditions since 2010. They call it the mega drought of Chile. In particular, there were two terrible years, 2019 and 2021. They were super dry, two of the most dry years in the history of Chile. And a result of these conditions, in 2020 at Amerigo's operation in Chile, we put in place a water risk management plan, which included revamping our water recovery system so that we could reuse more of our processed water. We improved our classification equipment to ensure that we could work with incoming tailings that contained less water. We ensured that appropriate water reserves were available at the plant. So essentially what we created was a matrix of sources and uses of water that we could be monitoring for 18 months on a rolling basis so that we could always have a clear projection of any water risk ahead of time. And this worked really well and allowed us to operate continually without adjusting production because of water constraints. I think that everybody in the mining industry has done something similar. You read a lot about desalinization projects in Chile. So water mitigation usage and water risk management have become an integral part of how mines are run, I would guess, everywhere around the world, but certainly in Chile. Now, if you fast forward to June of this year, things changed significantly. We have, I would draw the analogy with what occurred in California earlier this year, where they also went from a drought to substantial rains. So this year turned out to be an El Niño year in Chile. And what typically happens with this phenomenon in the region is that we have a combination of more days of rain, heavier rains, and warmer temperatures. The last time an intense El Niño season occurred in Chile was in 1997. So that was a while back. So at Amerigo, we had two separate events associated with heavy rains. At the end of June, we had a short duration event with torrential rain and higher than normal temperatures. And this prevented snow from accumulating in the Andes Mountains that are near our facility. And this caused rising water levels in rivers, which led to floodings. In our case, we didn't have any floodings within the plant, but the rising water levels in a river adjacent to our facility brought down three high voltage power towers and caused us to be disconnected from the central power grid. That was the issue, the identifiable issue. So what we did is we secured a secondary power supply. We started processing fresh tailings from El Teniente while we completed the repairs to our towers. And eventually we installed seven new high voltage towers and we reduced our copper production guidance, unfortunately, from 62.3 to 60.5 million pounds as a result of this event. The second event was different. It had to do with a period of sustained rains and some days of extremely high daily rainfall. This essentially ended up with a substantial water buildup in our historic tailings deposit. There was substantial flooding. We used all of our pumping equipment to get that water out of there. And believe it or not, we ended up removing more than 2.7 million liters of water. We're back to normal. We're back to normal as of we issued a news release yesterday. Our operations are now processing fresh and historical tailings. There are no more heavy rains in the weather forecast. Let's hope that that continues to be the case. Usually the rain season in the region where we operate ends around mid-September. So it is consistent in that basis right now. And these rains have disrupted everything in Chile this year, agriculture, industrial activity, damages to infrastructure, etc. Now, to be totally honest with you, given that we had put in place our water risk management program and it had proved to be a very effective one, I would certainly have preferred not to have to deal with this torrential rains that ended up disrupting our operations so tremendously this year. Having said that, we do have substantial more rain in store, water in storage. So that is the silver lining out of this event.
That's what I was going to ask. So I assume your water inventories are topped up at this point.
They are.
Okay, that's great. Thank you for that color. Now, I wanted to move a little bit on to your assets in particular, because they're really unique. They are one of a kind in the copper market. We haven't seen a company like you guys, the way you operate. So I was hoping you could explain to people a little bit more how you've managed to structure a company where you're paying a 9.2% dividend yield. That's the latest that I saw, but you're not taking traditional mining risk. So could you briefly explain your business to everyone listening?
Sure. Well, Amerigo is one of a kind copper producer because we produce our copper entirely from the waste material of the world's largest underground copper mine, which, as I mentioned before, is Codelco's El Teniente mine. This waste material is called tailings, and Amerigo is the only company in the world producing copper from tailings at the rate that we do. Our annual copper production is around 30,000 tons, or said differently, north of 60 million pounds a year. That's what you would expect a mid-sized copper mine to produce. The operation is located in Chile. We've spoken that Chile is the copper mecca of the world. It has more than 30 years of uninterrupted production. And America bought this operation in 2003 and invested considerable money to more than double production to where we are now. We have a very straightforward business model. It consists of us processing those tailings, recovering copper. We also recover molybdenum as a byproduct from those tailings, and we get to sell the recovered copper and moly at market prices. For doing this, we pay a royalty to El Teniente in exchange for having the rights to process the tailings. So it's really very simple. It's very easy to model as well. Given that we have already spent the capital needed to grow the business to where it needs to be, we are now in a sweet spot where no further expansion capital is required. We only need to face sustaining capex, risk mitigation capex, and we have low levels of debt, which are structured in such a way that we expect to be debt-free by June of 2026. Under these low investing and financing requirements, surplus cash that is generated under the right copper price conditions is therefore available to be distributed to shareholders. 2 years ago, we implemented a multi-layered capital return strategy. We're paying a quarterly dividend, and we have retired more than 11% of our capital via share buybacks in the last 2 years. The third element of our capital return strategy will kick off when copper prices recover to stronger levels than what we have seen now. It's a performance dividend, and essentially it's a performance to copper price dividend. The yield that you refer to is the yield of our quarterly dividend of 3 cents Canadian per share per quarter, which, as you mentioned, is quite unique for a mid-sized copper company.
Great. Thank you for that. And I wanted to, before we move on to the last question, I wanted to thank you for making sure I could pronounce molybdenum the right way. So I appreciate that. I'll never forget it.
When you get in trouble, just call it moly.
That's the easy way out. I'm going to do that. Okay. So you touched on this a little bit, but I just want to end things off with, if we are looking at higher copper prices structurally over the rest of the decade, as we're all expecting, what is your view regarding shareholder payouts? You know, the dividend versus performance dividend versus buybacks, or are there growth projects you would look at as free cash flow increases? Just trying to understand how you think about that.
Growth outside of our niche, which is copper tailings reprocessing, is not in the cards. We are not looking to buy a copper exploration asset to add up to our portfolio and quote unquote reduce one operation risk. A growth within our niche could occur under the right conditions. And I think I've spoken about those conditions whenever I have participate in a conference or I meet with investors. What does that mean? Essentially, tailings are low grade materials. You need the counterbalance of high volume. You need the right geographical conditions. We get our tailings via gravity. That's a significant benefit for us. And you have to have the right partner to be working with, which is what we have with Codelco. So that takes us back to our capital return policy. Under stronger copper prices, our free cash flow generation is very significant. So we have two flexible tools to return capital beyond the quarterly dividend, which I've spoken about, are the buyback and the performance dividend. For those who follow Amerigo, you know that with the appropriate levels of cash, we have been very active buying shares back and retired, as I said before, more than 11% of the issued and outstanding in 2 years. We plan to resume our normal course issuer bid and have it open so that we can use it opportunistically as we want to continue to retire shares. And the performance dividend is another tool which will pay shareholders a bonus dividend when cash accumulates from stronger copper prices. This is a very flexible tool, and I always want to stress that. The board of directors will have full flexibility in their say of how much, how often, and how frequently they want to declare a performance dividend when conditions arise. Amerigo's return of capital policy is well constructed to allow for these three returns to shareholders based on where we are in the copper cycle. We have the tools in place. We're not guessing what we will be doing. We have them ready to execute when copper prices kick in at the levels they have to kick in. And I'm confident we are going to get to use them all.
That was a great rundown of how you think about capital returns. Thank you.
Aurora, thank you very much. That's a great overview of the market and what Amerigo does. And I just, from our perspective, Grizzle's perspective, I just kind of refer back to the point I made at the start of the call. We think companies, resource companies, particularly oil and gas and mining, we're at a unique part in this cycle where you're getting asymmetric return profiles from companies that return capital to shareholders, particularly dividends, and again, quality dividend yielders. So, you know, free cash flow coverage is there, strong balance sheets. We believe you get this asymmetric return profile where you participate in the upside and you get downside protection, arguably the holy grail of resource investing. And Amerigo's dividend yield is 9.2%. Aurora, thank you so much for joining us. Always a pleasure chatting, and we'll see you at the next conference.
Absolutely.
Appreciate it.
Thank you. Have a great weekend.
Thank you.